Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Founded the great religions. Zeta Talk has stated that Jesus, Muhammad, and Buddha were all star children with similar goals and a similar message, to love one another and live in peace. Their message got corrupted, however, in all cases by others wishing to direct their followers. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Jesus, written July 1995. Jesus was not an ordinary man, but he was no more the Son of God than any other human. Jesus was an entity from a higher dimension. Bear in mind that there are many, many entities among humans now, functioning in human society, who are operating in the same manner as Jesus was in his day. Jesus is a very high-grade entity operating in the service to other orientation. He was immovable in that regard, meaning that those allowing him to come to earth and undertake the incarnation could trust him not to veer from his stated path. When Jesus was on earth, he lived the life of a normal man, as all incarnations into human form do. He had sexual hungers, felt despondent when alone and rejected, and doubted his ability to deal with issues before him. He was human in every regard. As with all incarnations, by the rule of forgetfulness, he did not remember his prior spiritual state, where he lived in light and wonder, a veritable feast of learning and exploration. He chose his path as Jesus, for the message he wished to deliver was, to him, a primary message of great importance, and the flak he met was not at all unexpected. Jesus knew he would take heat. That he was tortured to death was not a surprise to him. Jesus accomplished his mission in formulating and disseminating a message of love for others and sacrifice for love. This message is the opposite of the service to self message, which is love thyself and sacrifice for no one. The words of Jesus, where possible, have been corrupted by those who wish to see mankind headed toward the service to self orientation. Most of the words of Jesus were spoken carefully and spoken often enough so that their meaning could not be corrupted. He repeated the same message in many different contexts and to many different groups. In this he succeeded in passing on a legacy, the legacy he intended. Jesus was not alone in incarnating from a higher density in order to assist in the spiritual evolution of mankind. Buddha and Muhammad, among others, have done likewise, with similar results. The message bearer should not be blamed for the twists made upon their message. Look to those who are perpetrating the twists and place blame accordingly. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The message of a Messiah is within the Christian message, just as the anticipated arrival of the Mahdi is within the Islamic message. But this, for the Zetas, is not what it seems. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Messiah, written July 1995. The Christians claim that Jesus was the Messiah, but the Muslims claim he was the wrong man, and the Jews say the Messiah hasn't arrived as yet. The problem here, of course, is that there isn't any Messiah, so any such attribute ascribed to any human just won't stick. Mankind must save itself, and in particular, each human must save him or herself. The desire to be saved is not something that springs from humans, but an idea that has been put forth by the religious elite. If mankind can be made nervous about their future chances, then they will be all the more likely to seek assistance from the religious elite, and pay well for it, we might add. Each human makes their own path and earns their own reward, and payment of money or goods and services to the religious elite has no effect whatsoever, other than to make the religious elite happy. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. How much of what the Bible reports about Jesus is accurate? Well, the virgin birth, for instance. Mary reportedly being visited by angels. What went on there? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Virgin Birth, written July 1995. The mother of Jesus did indeed have a virgin birth, and correctly ascribed this to a visit from an entity not of the earth, an entity she called an angel. We would direct the reader to what has been documented extensively about the ability of extraterrestrials to manipulate human birth. Jesus was the product of the union between Mary's egg and a man's sperm. Her husband Joseph, an old man, was impotent with old age. She required a donor, but was not the type of woman to be unfaithful to her husband, no matter what the mission. She was assisted in her desire to bear a child, to bear this special child, as both she and Joseph had given the call to service to other entities strongly and repeatedly, and understood full well the hardship their life might bear because of it. As artificial insemination was an unknown science in those days, the virgin birth was explained as best the people knew how. Thus, the story as told is essentially correct. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. That explains the visits by angels who were doctors about to do artificial insemination, apparently. Zeta Talk also supports many of the stories of miracles reported in the Bible, but with a practical twist. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Miracles, written July 1995. Many stories about Jesus are based on true incidences with untrue distortions. How and why did this occur? Based on the many stories being spread about Jesus, a simple statement made in error by a single person can spread and grow in details as it does. Think of the rumors you have today and how easily disinformation can catch on and continue. He seemed to them to be consistently so much more than a man, and indeed he was. As he faced the terrors they faced with such equanimity, his faithful concluded he must be a god. Why else would the threat of torture and death leave his face serene? Did Jesus walk on water? Desert sands, particularly in flat areas, produce mirages, and a common mirage is water. A human walking at a distance can be seen as walking on water. Did Jesus raise the dead? As Jesus was well connected to entities from higher densities, he was able and not reluctant to give the call for help in many situations. Thus he on occasion was instrumental in curing people who had been stricken and at the point of death. It is well known that severely ill people can appear to be dead, and have on occasion even been buried alive because of this confusion. Such a person, recovering suddenly because of intervention, would be rumored to have been raised from the dead. Did Jesus mold a bird from clay? He found and rescued a bird caught and caked in dried clay so that the flight or even motion was impossible. This was subsequently explained as creating a bird from the clay. Did Jesus make many loaves of bread from one or wine from water? A few of the faithful seated close to Jesus as he lectured, having brought their own lunch, would conclude that their lunch had been multiplied on observing the following. Jesus notes that newcomers are without food and asks those who had brought lunch to share, helping in the distribution. Later, more newcomers arrive with various foods which they share among themselves. The original arrivals look over their shoulders, noting the masses and the sharing of food, and make an erroneous conclusion based on their heartfelt admiration for Jesus. Did Jesus resurrect from the dead? The supposed resurrection of Jesus from the dead was, of course, a story based on the widespread human custom of carrying beloved deceased to what the bearers consider a proper burial. As Jesus had relayed that death is not the end, that his faithful could expect to meet him again, the disappearance of his corpse, a true occurrence, was supplemented with supposition. Where did he go? He resurrected, was the supposition. How do we know these things about Jesus? Where we, the individual Zetas speaking to you, were not necessarily there or reading from some sort of written record, we are consulting with Jesus himself and the group of entities he works with, his team. We go to the source for this information. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Eastern religions have a similar background in that their founder, Buddha, was different than eventually purported, the message twisted once again. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Buddha, written July 1995. Buddha was a star child and as such arrived on Earth from a higher density with a great deal more knowledge than the humans he mingled with. As with all incarnations, the corporal mind and body are ignorant and only gradually absorb what the incarnating spirit understands. Some call this process enlightenment, an apt term. Buddha did not require others, such as teachers, to become enlightened, as this was a self-directed process. Buddha attempted to communicate, through teachings to mankind, a message of how to balance the needs of the human body with spiritual growth. Yes and no, he succeeded. During his lifetime, Buddha was able to set in motion the dissemination of his philosophy, what he hoped to teach mankind. This motion has never lost its momentum, nor the purity of its message, but alternative interpretations, more to the liking of those who were lazy or indulgent, sprang up. And these interpretations have been running in parallel with Buddha's intended message. Buddha's message has thus been primarily interpreted to be a directive to enjoy life, but that is not altogether what he was attempting to teach. This is a one-sided interpretation, the big-bellied, smiling Buddha enjoying life without worry. What happened to the spiritual message? End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The yoga in the Hindu religion teach control of the human body to an astonishing degree. To some extent, their claims are true, and the Zetas explain. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Yoga, written April 2002. Yogas who control their bodies to be able to breathe with reduced oxygen use in closed chambers, buried chambers for hours past the point of death in a normal person, or otherwise resist injury by walking over hot coals, are not operating outside their physiology. If they were, then why are there limits on what is reported or performed? If one can walk over hot coals, then why not through a firestorm? If breathing less and reducing the metabolism for hours, then why not weeks? If superhuman powers were afoot, then limits would not be in place. Yogis learn, through dedicated practice, to control their body's reactions, not unlike a warrior resisting pain during battle in order to survive. Your body's use of oxygen can take surprising steps, as for instance where a child falls into very cold water and is apparently dead for an hour or more, then revived as normal. This is an indication of the capacity of the body to reduce its normal reactions. Yogis who walk over coals have, in the first place, calloused bare feet that have almost an inch of dead skin, thickened on the soles. They have analyzed and practiced just how long the foot must be on a hot coal, how quickly lifted, and where to place the foot. Blistering does not occur, as live flesh has not been burned. Dead, thickened skin peels off, rebuilding underneath, and no one but the yoga is the wiser. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. But some stories are not true. For instance, the ability to live on light alone. Recently promulgated by the new Buddha, a young man found sitting at the base of a tree. And I quote from the 2006 news articles. Pilgrims flocked to see Buddha boy said to have fasted 6 months. Thousands of pilgrims are pouring into the dense jungle of southern Nepal to worship a 15-year-old boy who has been hailed as a new Buddha. Devotees claim that Ram Bhanjan, who is silently meditating beneath a tree, has not eaten or drunk anything since he sat down at his chosen spot 6 months ago. End of the quote. The Zetas explain, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Divine Nectar, written July 1995. A common falsehood promulgated by the yogis is that they nourish themselves not with the same food and water required by mere humans whom they would lead, but by the absorption of light energy, called divine nectar. This is a falsehood difficult for the followers to disprove. As to put in place the controls necessary to disprove the proposition, the followers would have to highly insult the master. Do they have a bite to eat in their private quarters, or slip a nibble into their mouths now and then during the day from from under their flowing robes? Who can be certain? There has been no controlled study on this matter, and the reader can be assured that if humans had even a slight indication in this direction, that the massive starvation and malnutrition that occurs all over the earth, without abatement throughout human history, would have produced at least one human who seemed to thrive without food. A controlled experiment to disprove the proposition would require that a yoga master be willing to undergo such a test, be placed in an isolated situation where the only input to his system would be the light claimed to nourish, and be observed continuously by people who are not the yoga master's followers and who therefore do not have preconceived opinions on the outcome. No such controlled test has ever been done, and for good reason. The proposition would be disproved. Why do yoga masters purport that this practice works? What's in it for them? India is a country where starvation and malnutrition are on the rise and has always been a grim fact of life for all but the privileged classes. The caste systems are rigid, and there is scant hope of escaping. Some yogis purport that this practice succeeds to give hope to the painful, and some have even convinced themselves that they feel refreshed after basking, but most do so simply to raise their status among their followers. How great is their master? He has mastery over divine nectar, or so he says. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And can they levitate? Another myth, like living on light, per the Zetas. And I quote from Zeta Talk on levitation, written February 2002. Levitation of objects and rapid movement of spaceships is largely based on manipulation of gravity. As we have described in space travel, faster than light when the repulsion force is removed and there is only attraction, it's a quick kiss. This manipulation of gravity is also evident in our spaceships, which not only hover, they have their own center of gravity inside. Levitation by mankind is a trick. For those who think they are viewing this and feel it cannot be so, we would point out the many ways that tricks can be done. Wire or string can be the same color as the backdrop, and thus not seen, or clear in nature for this effect. Likewise, pedestals can be under an object, and as long as the same color or appearance as the backdrop, not seen. In these tricks, there is often distraction at play during the levitation, such that the attention of the audience is drawn away from these areas. There are objects that are passed under the levitated object that break at the point where they pass by the pedestal or wires and snap together again. This is because they are magnetized and solid enough that the break and reattachment can be counted on. All this accompanied by much noise and music and waving about as distraction. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Just as Christianity teaches the good will go to heaven, the Hindu teach that nirvana can be reached. But the Hindu ascribe to reincarnation, many lifetimes during the learning process, wherein Christianity teaches one lifetime. Perhaps that's why the Hindu are more fatalistic, accepting their fate. They know they'll get another chance and see life as a continuum. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Nirvana, written August 1995. What the Christians describe as heaven has an equivalent in other major religions and in all human cultures. What is being referred to here is what the human soul understands intuitively awaits. A promise, a possibility, life in light form without pain or hunger or struggle, love all around, an information and exploration extravaganza. The Hindus correctly understand that many lifetimes of practice, many lessons precede this treasured state. They also describe reincarnation and backsliding during incarnations and stages of spiritual growth with the ultimate nirvana, achieved only after much personal struggle. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The third star child who came to earth in the same time period as Jesus and Buddha was Muhammad. His message, like the other two, twisted after his death into edicts Muhammad never intended. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Muhammad, written July 1995. Muhammad, like Jesus and Buddha, was an entity from another world who incarnated on earth in hopes of spreading knowledge about the spiritual realm. Yes and no, they succeeded. Muhammad would be horrified to learn of the militaristic stance some of his supposed followers have taken. His message was to blend with the universe in peace, to blunt the aggressive nature of man so as to listen to the whispers of the spheres. Most of his followers correctly understood his message, but are lost in the thunderstorm coming from many of the Muslim leaders who would spread blood over the landscape to win a small point. They send forth their faithful youth to die on false promises of an afterlife they cannot deliver. And like most of the world's religious elite, they know this full well. Parasites on the blood of their young, whom they care not for. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Like Christianity, Buddhism has a messiah whom they call the Maitreya, and Islam has a messiah whom they call the Mahdi. Both are to appear during troubled times, the end times, and both are reported to have appeared, interestingly enough. And I quote, Maitreya in Buddhism, the future Buddha, a Buddha who will be reborn in a period of decline to renew the doctrine of the founder of Buddhism, the Buddha. And from another quote, many now expect the return of their awaited teacher, whether they call him the Christ, Messiah, the fifth Buddha, Krishna, or the Ayman Mahdi. Millions now know that the teacher who fulfills all these expectations is already living among us. Maitreya, the world teacher, has not come alone, but with a group of wise teachers who have long guided humanity from behind the scenes. They are returning to the everyday world to help us solve our most critical global problems. And from yet another quote, the Holy Prophet Muhammad has prophesied about several events that will occur just before the advent of the Day of Judgment. Al-Mahdi will materialize when the believers are severely oppressed in every corner of the world. He will fight the oppressors, unite the Muslims, bring peace and justice to the world, rule over the Arabs, and lead a prayer in Mecca at which Jesus will be present. End of the quotes. What's the connection here, other than the three star children starting these major religions, arriving on earth during the same time frame, preaching the same basic message of love, and pointing to the troubled times of change ahead, which we know of as the passage, the time of the pole shift, the time of the earth's transformation to a better time. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Maitreya, written November 2005. We have mentioned that the earth's transformation into a world to be inhabited only by those staunchly in the service to other orientation has been scheduled to occur during the coming pole shift. This because the die-off from the pole shift will foster a rapid change in incarnations, so that the souls that are scheduled to inherit the earth due to their service to other orientation can quickly reincarnate, and those souls scheduled to incarnate elsewhere can be quickly relocated. This pole shift is anticipated to be harsh, with a 90% die-off in the population resulting. Beyond being mentioned in prophecy and religion as a time of great geological upheaval, the time is referred to for its socio-political aspects and the spiritual transformation that will occur, known as Armageddon in the Christian religion, for instance, with the return of Jesus predicted and war and rumors of war. Known as the Mahdi in Islam, with a similar outcome and timing tied to the return of Jesus. During a world transformation, there is a polarizing of the spiritual orientations into service to self and service to other groups. The service to self, losing out on control of the world they must now leave, show their rage at loss by attempting power grabs such as the current war in Iraq, an obvious attempt to control the world's oil resources, thus the anticipated warmongering centered in the Middle East in prophecy. We have mentioned that the three great religions of the earth were founded by star children, with Buddha, Muhammad, and Jesus all having a similar mission and message. Of course, this message has been distorted by ambassadors from the service to self, who inserted rules and regulations and waged religious wars. We have mentioned that the anticipated return of Jesus should not be interpreted to be this particular soul, who is busy elsewhere at all times on missions similar to the one he had on earth. What he meant was that many in the service to other, his obvious orientation, would be coming to earth at this time. Likewise with the Buddha, the Maitreya, which is understood to be many, not one, persona. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The current times, leading into the pole shift, are mentioned in the Quran and Islamic literature as much as in the Bible and related literature. And I quote from an Islamic hadith, 6931. Allah's apostle came to us all of a sudden as we were busy in a discussion. He said, "What do you discuss about?" The companions said, "We are discussing about the last hour." Thereupon he said, "It will not come until you see 10 signs before," and in this connection he made a mention of the smoke of the beast, the rising of the sun from the west, the descent of Jesus, son of Mary, the Gog and the Magog, and landslides in three places, one in the east, one in the west, and one in Arabia, at the end of which fire would burn forth from Yemen and would drive people to the place of their assembly. End of the quote from the Hadith. The Islamic prediction on the sun rising in the west equates to the Fatima prediction of 3 days of darkness, as per the Zetas this was the same tipping away of the North Pole to evade a magnetic particle blast from Planet X. And I quote from Zeta Talk on Revelations, written August 2002. The Bible, when written, had a specific audience in those in the region, as Jesus was just one of many star children visiting Earth with the intent of passing on a message of love thy neighbor as thyself, and the spread of Christianity not anticipated any more than the spread of the Quran almost worldwide. Thus those who interpreted his words or put their personal visions into words were in this tradition, speaking to the people of the area. Revelations describes, often in symbolic language, the coming pole shift by explaining that those in these regions would experience hail, earthquake, exploding volcanoes that darken the sky with ash, firestorms from air passing over the volcanoes, and being on the long day side of the earth. A fire dragon in the sky, the heat of the long day, an unending beating of the summer sun on an area near the equator, the heat of hot earth as many fault lines adjust, some by subducting under each other or by allowing lava to flow closer to the surface. Frantic insects of the desert not waiting for night to creep about but running in panic over people not used to this experience. In reading the words of Revelation, those words that apply to the earth changes without doubt, one can see what folklore and ourselves are explaining will occur. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Why were frank and explicit descriptions of the coming pole shift, such as occur in the Book of Enoch and the parallel Bible, the Colbran, omitted from the official Bible? Whose hands were into the editing process, making the decisions on what should and should not be included? And what was their agenda? I quote from Zeta Talk, The Good Book, written July 1995. A number of times we, the Zetas, and others have discussed how the founders of the great religions of Earth, such as Jesus as the founder of Christianity, or Muhammad as the founder of Islam, were themselves incarnated spirits from higher realms who attempted to teach mankind through their repeated counsel to the masses. Jesus and Muhammad took care to repeat their verbal messages because of the tendency of such messages to be distorted and turned from their original meaning. Nevertheless, their message did get twisted in the Bible and Quran. How did this happen? The message themselves remained pure, but additions were made and attributed to the speaker. Thus a simple statement to love thy neighbor became a series of rules on how such love was to be conducted. These rules were never relayed by the speaker and are in fact a hallmark of the service to self-orientation. Thus a simple message bearing the concept of service to others became a distraction of rules, so that empathy and fair play are lost in the adherence of meaningless rules. These rules have the facade of love, but close examination shows otherwise. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And what of the Fatima secret? Was this pole shift related? Per Pope John, this was about an assassination of a pope. Not so, per reports. and I quote from a Newsmax article, asked in 1980 why the secret had yet to be released, Pope John Paul II told a German audience, because of the seriousness of its contents, in order not to encourage the worldwide power of communism to carry out certain coups, my predecessors in the chair of Peter have diplomatically preferred to withhold its publication. On the other hand, it should be sufficient for all Christians to know this much. If there is a message in which it is said that the oceans will flood entire sections of the earth, that from one moment to the other, millions of people will perish, there is no longer any point in really wanting to publish this secret message. End quote. So the third secret of Fatima was about the pole shift. So why the lie? The Zetas explain, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Fatima Secret, written January 2005. Of course, everyone anticipates that the remaining Fatima secret, known to few except the hierarchy of the Catholic Church and Sister Lucia, who received the vision, will encompass the end times. What else would cause the children to fall screaming at what they saw? Few accepted the obvious deflection announced in recent years that this involved the assassination of a pope, which would perhaps stun or sadden a child, but not send them screaming in horror, writhing on the ground. In the main, sudden and massive earth changes are simply not expected, and thus screaming in horror is the appropriate response, especially if the one visualizing this, living it during an intense vision, is but a child. Place yourself, then, as the child you were, dependent on others to protect you and under the dictates of others as to where and under what circumstances you, as a child, might live. How would you react to the following in a vision? The ground opening up in front of you, a wide chasm that swallows what clings to the edges of the chasm, trees tipping into the chasm and ripping their clinging roots, no path or village square safe from such a surprise. Buildings shattered under cracks that flash across the surface like lightning bolts, falling in dust-filled implosions as the infrastructure snaps, and the realization that you are trapped under the debris and your cries are going unheard. Walls of fire forming and falling from the sky, setting you and others running from beneath it on fire, so you become a fleeing torch, no hope of putting out the flames by rolling on the ground, as all around is a holocaust, and your flesh covered with a sticky substance, fuel for the fire. A quiet tsunami rolling toward you as you stand on the shore, evident at first as water rising over walls and rooftops, silently, relentlessly, until the village is covered in water and nowhere for the floating life to cling to until exhaustion takes you down. Sworn to silence, not because there is nothing that can be done to avert the calamity, and not because publication would encourage power grabs by godless communism, the suppression of the remaining Fatima secret was done for the convenience of the Catholic Church and those who ally with the Church. Just as with the cover-up, where admitting the presence of Planet X in the inner solar system and the likely outcome is inconvenient to those in political and fiscal control of the world, this suppression was done for convenience. Did not those who gave the children this vision intend it to be known? Were those who denied pedophilia in the Church for so long, while allowing it to continue, put the safety of the innocent children under their care ahead of their physical concerns? It is for convenience that the vision is suppressed. Sister Lucia, a captive in silence, and a frank lie about the substance of the vision being the assassination of a pope put forth. Of course there is a reason to reveal the secret. People can choose to limit the size of their families, can choose where to live, can choose a profession or trade based on anticipated need, and in general can plan to love one another with more intensity if they're aware of what is likely to occur. This does not jibe with the Church's doctrine to increase the size of the flock on pain of excommunication if one uses contraceptives, a doctrine which stands at odds with the apparent acceptance of pedophilia in the Church, as apparently it's failing to increase the size of the flock, not sex, that is the sin. You are told business as usual, stay at your jobs, tithe to your church, remain on the coastlines and crowded into the cities, and support the comfortable lifestyles of the hierarchy. Those in the halls of power in the church know otherwise, but comfort themselves that nothing can be done to save mankind anyway. Oh, are they planning to do nothing for themselves? Nothing to place themselves on solid rock and away from the coastlines? Such is the love of those in the halls of power in the church. Are they following the advice of Jesus to love the least among them? Are they following the golden rule? Are they warning those along coastlines and near volcanoes or in crumbling cities? Are they allowing them the human right to make their own decisions about where they wish to be or where they wish to take those they love? It appears the church is being run by dictators, looking out for themselves solely to the end. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The pedophile issue is an example of how the religious elite look out for themselves and not those they purport to serve. And I quote from an article in The Observer called "Vatican Told Bishops to Cover Up Sex Abuse," dated April 17, 2005. The Vatican instructed Catholic bishops around the world to cover up cases of sexual abuse or risk being thrown out of the church. The Observer has obtained a 40-year-old confidential document from the secret Vatican archive. Bearing the seal of Pope John was sent to every bishop in the world. The instructions outlined a policy of strictest secrecy in dealing with allegations of sexual abuse and threatens those who speak out with excommunication. They also call for the victim to take an oath of secrecy at the time of making a complaint to church officials. It states that the instructions are to be diligently stored in the secret archive of the Curia as strictly confidential. Lawyers point to a letter the Vatican sent to bishops in May 2001, clearly stating the 1962 instructions was in force until then. The letter is signed by Cardinal Ratzinger, the most powerful man in Rome besides the Pope and who heads the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, the office which ran the Inquisition in the Middle Ages. End of the quote. Well, of course, Ratzinger was at the helm of the pedophilia cover-up, and now is the Pope, showing how deep the need to hold secrets within the Church has become. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Pedophilia Power, written April 2005. It has long been known that rape is more about domination of the weak by the strong than sex. Sexual release, after all, can be effectively achieved by one's own hand, so there's no need to attack another for relief. It's a power trip, and more than just the ability to force another into a subservient position. Those inclined to service to self often lean towards sadism during their power trips, as this is a test of their power, their domination over others. If the victim is pleading, this enhances the sense of power. If the victim is torn and bruised, will have their life destroyed by the act being performed, this again enhances the sense of power to the perpetrator, as in most cases they get away with an act that society routinely abhors. Rape of women or young men, battery, is the first step for those seeking this type of power trip, but the worst of the lot discover abusing children brings a greater high. It's not surprising that child molesters are attacked in prisons, as even among hardened criminals they're considered scum. Thus, to get away with the rape of a child boosts the sense of power in those given to such practices, as they can do, have done, what all of society considers despicable and seeks to prevent. Where, then, in all of this, do the reports of the rape of choir boys by Catholic priests fit in? Secrets have power in that knowledge empowers a man. Societies that hold secrets thus have power, at least in their own minds. That power can be vaporized if a single member of that society blabs, or so it is feared. Thus, to be initiated into the society and be privy to secrets the society holds, one must be owned in some way or another by the society, and this is best accomplished per the minds of those heading those societies, which lean in the direction of sadistic control, by blackmail. It is pedophilia, with absolute proof of the participant's involvement, that is considered the premier blackmail means, in that the church denies its priests a sexual outlet, and many migrate to the church due to homosexual leanings, which they are desperate to deny. Entrapping those likely to rise in power within the Catholic Church in pedophilia is relatively easy, and explains why the hierarchy of the church was so resistant to admitting any wrongdoing in the pedophilia among priests in the lower ranks when it was revealed. The hierarchy, those at the top of the church, are not without shame themselves. When Catholic pedophilia is protected at the highest levels, it's clear many in power are members of this club, hold secrets, and have sold their souls, in essence, to be members of this club. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Beyond keeping secrets to serve themselves, organized religion uses the threat of hell and the promise of heaven, or in the case of Islam, perhaps the promise of 72 virgins as inducements to follow orders from the religious elite. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Damnation, written January 1996. A common curse among humans is to damn someone to hell, to damnation, or its equivalent. Children are warned to mind their behavior or they will likewise be damned. Damnation, as the fires of hell, is spoken of as something one does not escape. One is judged once and forever. Is such a thing possible? Punishment is only one side of this coin, with bribery found on the other side. Be good and you'll go to heaven. Both edicts have at their base the desire for control that the religious elite present as rules and regulations. They can no more deliver the faithful to heaven than they can damn them to hell. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Heaven or hell, or some version, appears in all religions. Nirvana, for instance. Just what is this obsession? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Heaven and Hell, written July 1995. Heaven and hell are described in the Bible and the Koran as places commensurate with the rewards deserved by those who have functioned in the service to others or service to self-orientation. In the minds of the authors of these books, who in the main were service to others when they authored the books. For primitive peoples, who relied upon fire for cooking and warmth, catching on fire was a known dilemma and the pain from such an accident not unknown. Thus, as one of the most excruciating pains, and one slow to heal and suffering the injured much pain during the healing process, eternal fire was the worst of the worst. Similarly, the higher one went, physically speaking, the better life got. Specifically, we are describing living on hilltops versus valleys, and having the higher campground versus one downhill. As the saying goes, shit flows downhill. Valleys have dampness and humidity, lizards and snakes and insects galore. Hilltops have breezes and vistas. Better yet is what the birds enjoy, high in the skies. Nothing can touch them, and as good as the hilltops are, the skies must be better. Thus heaven is viewed as up in the skies, and the higher the better. In fact, the just deserts of the service to other and service to self are not heaven and hell, but to live with their own kind, which is, in a manner of speaking, to our way of thinking, in any case, a type of heaven and hell. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. However, to control the flock, the followers, the religious elite describe damnation to hell as something that will occur unless the church is involved in a rescue, all of which requires money and gives the church control over the lives of the faithful. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Sin, written August 1995. One of the tools used by the religious elite to keep their minions in control is the concept of sin, by which they keep everybody nervous and hold the key to salvation. The rules, such as the Ten Commandments, which guide these matters, are almost entirely focused on actions not to be taken and how to stay in line. Apparently immobilized, the devout will be thus saved from damnation. Who benefits from this? Those in positions of authority within the service to self-orientation, both human and alien. It is no accident that church and state are frequently allied. Both want to control, to limit independent thought and action, to focus attention away from freedoms by describing the dangers therein. How does this benefit the service to self? In two ways. First, when humans are concerned about following the rules and limiting repercussions, they are not thinking about how to help others. One need only be in a crowded theater when fire breaks out, or on a sinking ship, to see what happens to humans when imminent danger is near. Panic, fear, me first, and all thought of helping others is put aside until the self is safe and secure. It's the same rare person, the exception, who thinks of others in these situations. As the treatment and attention these heroes receive attests, they are given rewards, even posthumous. How does the concept of sin, as publicized by the religious elite, serve the service to self? By limiting concern for others. Second, when humans structure themselves around a set of rules, they are giving control and authority to those who set the rules, and in essence, giving themselves as possessions to those who set the rules. They are owned. They are not free. Blind obedience does not entail any options or qualifications. Blind obedience is not what occurs when someone runs a red light in an emergency, knowing that stop-and-go lights are simply a practical way of preventing collisions at intersections. Blind obedience occurs when the flock follows the rules so as not to sin, and lets the religious elite rule on when infractions have occurred. Who will be the judge? Not God, but those who own and possess the sinners. This is all practice for life in the full-blown service to self orientation. There the pecking order is rigidly established and the rules by which one may be punished are utterly arbitrary. The strong, who set the rules, deciding not only what rules should be established but when infractions occur. Rather than going to hell because one sins, one tends to go to hell because one worries so very much about sinning. Rather than focus on the rules, humans would do well to focus on whether their behavior is helping or hurting others, the true importance of their actions. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Contrast this to what Jesus truly wanted, the practice of the golden rule, to see how far organized religion has fallen from the message intended. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Golden Rule, written September 2004. In the simple words of Jesus, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Jesus, Muhammad, and Buddha, star children all who came to leave a gift of clarity for mankind, all preached the same message, equality, where the least of you is considered on the same level as the self. Considering one's physical needs for food and shelter in a manner that balances concern for what others need, what the goat about to be slaughtered might feel, what the land overgrazed or tilled into a dust bowl might need. Confusing, a quagmire of intellectual decisions, if left to the intellect alone. What these great preachers left with mankind was the suggestion that the answer lies in the heart. Before you do something that will affect another, put yourself in that other's place and imagine the consequences of your action. This is generally known as the golden rule, do unto others. Driven by the heart, one will never make an errant decision from a spiritual standpoint. A man in agony over whether to share the meat from his last goat with his starving neighbors, when his own family is faint from hunger most of the time, will find his answer by placing himself in their perspective, as well as his family's perspective. What sense of abandonment will his neighbors have, seeing his family feast when they are cramped and weak? What need to throw up walls against empathy for the neighbors will his family require in order to choke down the meal quickly, blinded to the neighbor's plight? He chooses sharing, seeing that damage to the soul is the greater danger, as the physical will in any case pass. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on the Golden Rule. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.